It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll hear from the organizer of an event that will help Wisconsin veterans share their writing and art with the community. First, yesterday, Hillary Clinton testified to the House Select Committee on Benghazi for about 11 hours. Despite intense grilling and even arguing among the representatives present, it appears that there is no new information discovered about what happened in Benghazi, Libya, on September 11, 2012. Here's Representative Susan Brooks, Republican from Indiana, asking the former Secretary of State about her contact with late Ambassador Christopher Stevens.
We have no record that you had any conversations with the ambassador after you swore him in and before he died, and you were his boss.
I was the boss of ambassadors in 270 countries. I was the boss of ambassadors in places like Afghanistan, where shortly before I visited one time, the embassy had been under brutal assault by the Taliban for hours. I am very well aware of the dangers that are faced by our diplomats and our development professionals. There was never a recommendation from Chris Stevens or anyone else to close Benghazi.
Criticism that the Republican-led committee was politically motivated has been heavy in recent weeks. Here with us now is Representative Mark Pocan, Democrat from Wisconsin. Representative Pocan, welcome back to Central Time.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Well, big picture, what's your take on what we learned from this testimony from Hillary Clinton to the Benghazi committee yesterday?
Rob, what we learned is it is time for us to move on to things to move the country forward. Let's make sure we have a budget. Let's get a transportation bill. Let's get something done. But this was proven to be nothing but a fishing expedition to try to get Hillary Clinton. Not only did the majority leader say that, not only did other Republican members of Congress say that, but after 11 hours yesterday, it's more than obvious that this has been a political attempt to get Hillary Clinton all along. And, you know, unfortunately, it's wasted millions of dollars of taxpayer money so the Republicans can play politics.
Well, and the committee chair, Trey Gowdy, said, yeah, this is similar testimony to what we've already heard, but I mean, there were real breakdowns, weren't there? There were real concerns with how the U.S. government handled security in that embassy. Isn't that worth having out there, still having in the public eye?
Well, you know, I used to be, when I first got in Congress, on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and we did all of this stuff last session. There was a major report that was done, the Benghazi Accountability Review Report, which is an independent report done by Ambassador Thomas Pickering and the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen. And we had, you know, months and months of hearings. I remember sitting personally through about 2.5 hours of private questioning of about a 5-hour question period that we had that not in hearing with the same folks. The same questions have come up, have come through. We understand what happened with Benghazi. But if you look at yesterday, they didn't really talk about Benghazi. Trey Gowdy mentioned the word Benghazi 18 times in 11 hours, but he brought up emails 78 times. So clearly, this isn't about Benghazi anymore. This is about throwing a bunch of spaghetti on the wall, seeing what sticks, and all we realize is enough spaghetti was thrown on the wall that you could feed a homeless shelter for a week. I mean, this has been a bunch of attempts to do something. Nothing came through, and now hopefully we move on to serious business.
Do you think that'll happen? Do you think that Republicans in the House are ready to move on from this Benghazi issue and the related email conversation?
Well, I'm hopeful because, you know, even today reading media accounts, even conservatives are saying what a waste of time this hearing was. I think everyone realizes that, you know, this is done. It's run its course. It was a tragedy. But, you know, when you physically look at the planet, there's no way that Hillary Clinton is responsible for the amount of miles there are on the planet and why you couldn't get the reaction you needed to try to deal with it quicker. That's what we found out through all those hearings on the committee. From, again, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who has got more military knowledge than pretty much anyone, and to think that, you know, somehow some members of Congress are going to have more information than the experts who did the review, it just shows us why this was a political witch hunt. So my hope is that Paul Ryan is going to have his hands full if he becomes Speaker. You know, we're going to hopefully get by Benghazi. Hopefully we'll get to a transportation bill. Hopefully we'll not shut down government. But wasting more time and effort on this is hopefully the Congress of the past, and let's hope for a better future.
Democrats on this committee spent a lot of their time mainly supporting Hillary Clinton here, arguing with Republicans. There was some talk, and still is, talk that Democrats should stop attending the committee. They should stop justifying its existence. What do you make of that question?
Well, you know, I mean, it depends. If they're going to keep, you know, going back to this and back to this, that's just a serious question we have to decide. The problem is you're still wasting taxpayer dollars on this. We've now spent, you know, another year looking at this, yet they're not looking at Benghazi anymore. Now they're on this other hunt. And when you've got current Republican members of Congress, the current majority leader, I mean, all telling you this is done for political reasons, there's really no reason to continue this, and I think the fight has to be around, let's get to the business that Congress is supposed to do. Like, why don't we have a budget with appropriate appropriation bills? Why don't we have a transportation bill in place for more than a few months? Let's get to the business of Congress, and I'm hoping that, you know, with Paul Ryan hopefully bringing some unity to the Republican caucus, we'll be able to do that. And it's not the same 40 or 50 hardcore Tea Party people being the tail that wags the dog. I certainly hope more for Paul Ryan.
We're talking to Congressman Mark Pocan from Wisconsin. One more question about the committee, and then we'll move on to some wider issues. The political fallout here, this obviously a major Democratic presidential candidate testifying for 11 hours yesterday. How do you think this affects her campaign going forward?
Well, I mean, she did a great job, right? I mean, she's got more experience than just about anyone who's ever run for president. You know, a U.S. senator, a former first lady, a former secretary of state. I mean, you know, what she showed is she is ready for prime time in every possible way. And, you know, just ironically, politically, you know, you've got Donald Trump, who's the front runner in the Republican polls right now for president, complaining about a three-hour debate. And here you had, you know, Secretary Clinton go through 11 hours of grilling all by herself. And handled it quite well because, again, they were on a political witch hunt, and she rose above that. So I'm hoping, again, we just move beyond the politics of this. You know, we all know there's a presidential campaign. There's a lot of issues where Republicans and Democrats are different, and we can explain our visions of the country. But wasting time and really reopening these wounds to the families of the victims of Benghazi, I think using them for political purposes has to end.
You've mentioned your Wisconsin delegation colleague, Paul Ryan, maybe soon to be the House Speaker. What do you think of him as a potential future Speaker of the House?
You know, Paul's a smart guy. He's very personable. You know, I think he truly didn't want to be Speaker, which may be one of the best things going for him, that he really wanted to be able to spend time with his family back in Wisconsin. But because they have so much dysfunction in the Republican caucus right now, that if Paul didn't do it, literally, you know, 1 week we had a freshman from Montana saying they would run for Speaker. I mean, there was no one in line. It would have been really very difficult. So I think Paul kind of took one for the team, and I'm hoping that the team respects him for that because, you know, if the same 40 or 50 hardcore Tea Party people continue to say no to everything, including things like budgets and transportation bills, then Paul's going to have the same problems that John Boehner had. And, you know, I don't think that's healthy for government. I don't think that's healthy whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or independent. We just need to move beyond that. So I'm hoping that he really has been able to unify the caucus and they don't continue to throw roadblocks up for him, and we can try to move forward.
Do you think Speaker Ryan is somebody that you and your fellow Democrats could maybe work with on some key issues like transportation you mentioned?
Well, I'm hopeful. You know, I mean, I think the most interesting part of it, I mean, Paul, we have a good respectful relationship with in Wisconsin, and I think our delegation in general has a good respectful relationship with each other, and that's positive, right? We have Wisconsin common sense, and I'm hoping that means something. But we also have to remember is Paul Ryan is probably one of the most conservative people to go into the speakership that we've ever had. And there are big differences around things like Social Security and Medicare that, you know, we're not going to privatize them. We're not going to voucherize those programs. And we're going to have some serious differences. But I'm hopeful that we can just move the basics forward. I mean, I think we need to have a budget with appropriation bills. We need to have a transportation bill. We need to make sure we don't shut down government. Let's get the 101 stuff done. And if we could do the 101 stuff, I think with Paul Ryan, I think we can get more things done.
Turning to 2016 congressional elections, I assume you and your colleagues would like to be electing a speaker of your own in a couple of years. What do you think the prospects are? Seems like a long shot for Democrats to take control of the House.
Well, I mean, the last few weeks really showed the dysfunction in the Republican caucus, right? I mean, if it wasn't for Paul Ryan, this would turn into, a true circus for probably the next several months. And we don't know, it still might turn into a circus. But I think people are seeing that the Republicans haven't been able to lead. We've been experiencing this for the last now 5 years. And people might finally, have had enough and realize that if you can't change the way Congress operates, you have to change the faces of the people who are in Congress. And my hope is that either we get functioning, and if we don't, that we make those changes so that we can get back to the point that we're getting our jobs done here.
Congressman Pocan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rob.
We've been talking to U.S. Representative Mark Pocan from Wisconsin about the nearly 11-hour testimony that Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, gave to the House Benghazi Committee yesterday. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. An event next week brings in veterans from all around Wisconsin to present their writing and their art to the community. It's called Veterans Express Themselves. It's taking place at Whitehall Memorial High School in western Wisconsin. It's on Saturday, November 7th. The Heartbeat Center for Writing, Literacy, and the Arts will sponsor that event. Scott Schultz joins us now. He's founder of the Heartbeat Center for Writing, Literacy, and the Arts. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob.
And Howard Sherpy is with us. He's a Vietnam veteran and founding member of the Madison Group Deadly Writers Patrol. Howard, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here. Yeah.
Well, Scott, let's start with you. What inspired this event?
Well, in part, Howard.
Okay.
One of the missions, the biggest mission of the Heartbeat Project, is to find people who aren't stereotypical writers and artists and to get them to create. And me being a veteran myself and non-stereotypical looking and acting writer, mm-hmm. I wanted to tap the veteran side of things about that, with that. And when I mentioned Howard, Howard's been an inspiration in getting veterans around Wisconsin writing for quite a few years now, and has developed into a great writer himself. And then a couple of years ago, I was sitting and watching the national Arts Day for veterans out in Washington, and I was watching it on television, and I said, hey, I don't think we have one of those for Wisconsin. And I said, there it is. It all kind of just came together.
Now, Howard, let's bring you in on this. How has your experience as a veteran influenced your writing?
I think it has to a great deal, especially some of my early writings. And with the Deadly Writers Patrol, what we did was a bunch of us vets got together who liked to write and decided to meet every week, and we'd do some writing. And at first it was about Vietnam or Vietnam experiences. And then as time went on, it evolved completely into just plain writing. It didn't have to be about Vietnam. And I think it helped everybody. We found that writing is very therapeutic also. And a lot of the guys who were doing the writing had never really talked about or especially written about any of their experiences. And it really helped get some of the demons out, I think, for them.
I wanted to ask you more about that. Scott mentioned, Howard, that you encourage other veterans to write. Why is it important for veterans to have, whether it's writing or other kinds of art, that kind of creative outlet?
Well, I think any of those things are great ways to just get some of the things that are inside you and bothering you out into the open, and then you can examine them, especially with writing. You write about some experience that perhaps you went through, and then when you're all done with writing about it, you just let it sit there for a while and kind of go back to it and look. And sometimes it's just not as bad as it was when you were first writing about it. Some of the sting goes out of it, if you want to put it that way.
And Scott, take us to this event in a couple weeks in Whitehall. What are we going to see if we go there?
I just want to add one thing about what Howard said right at the end of that you let things set. In finding the writers and artists, there's still a lot of veterans that I'm bumping into at the moment who've maybe written something 10 or 15 years ago, and they say, well, I don't know if I want to necessarily share that, and fair enough. And, that's an event for some of these folks to actually share with what they're doing. What they're going to be seeing is at 10 a.m., we're going to open the doors to our visual arts. We have all genres of all different kinds of visual art that'll be presented there. And then our schedule originally has us at noon starting readings and any performance art programs that come in. And just in the past 72 hours, actually, because of the Deadly Writers Patrol group, a couple of the founding members are Craig Warner and Doug Bradley.
Sure.
Right here in town, and you might be familiar with their book, We Got to Get Out of This Place, the soundtrack of the Vietnam War. And they're out in Massachusetts on their way back probably right now. We're going to put them on at 11 a.m. that day with their presentation, which should be, if nothing else, all else aside, if they have some of the cool Vietnam era music, that's good enough to come in. But we have these people would
really enjoy that segment of the program.
Absolutely, I think so, Howard. And at noon, like I said, readings of all sorts, poetry. A few essays, and by the way, this isn't as Howard suggested. The writing and the arts evolve for a lot of veterans, so a good portion of this isn't going to be necessarily military related. There will be some of that, and there will be some powerful military related, writing especially. But it's really a celebration of veterans' creativity that we're doing.
Talking to Scott Schultz and. I'm sorry, excuse me. Talking to Scott Schultz and Howard Sherpy. They're talking about an event on November 7th. It'll be at Whitehall Memorial High School. It's called Veterans Express Themselves, opportunity for veterans from Wisconsin and I think beyond, actually, to share their writing, their visual art, performance art. Howard, I wanted to ask you, there may be veterans from different eras listening right now who maybe haven't explored their creative side. How would you encourage them to take up writing or painting?
Well, first of all, I guess if they're in the area of the program, I'd encourage them to come so they can hear some of that. And in our Deadly Writers Patrol, excuse me, we had a couple of World War II veterans, and we had a Korean veteran, and they fit right in with all of us Vietnam vets. And they wrote about things from those times that they had never touched before either. So I think that if someone from that era or from those wars would like to get involved in something like this, just sit down and start writing some of your remembrances or get with another veteran or two and write together. Sometimes that's a good way to do it because you don't feel as alone then. And then you can read your writings to each other, too. It really helps when you aren't just putting them on paper, but sharing them with other veterans who have been there and know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Howard, I've heard that sometimes the best help for veterans dealing with wartime experiences is being connected with other veterans who have been through the same thing. And, Scott, I wanted to ask about the venue here. I thought that was interesting. Why might Whitehall Memorial High School?
It was convenient for me. to be the most honest. But also, that venue, it's Memorial High School. Mm-hmm. And it's like so many other areas in Wisconsin, but at the high school they actually have their veterans honored right within the high school. Mm-hmm. And when I was just looking around for the venues, I I touched bases there, and these people just jumped all over it. Mm. And most interesting, and this is something that I hope increases as this program progresses in future years, the history teachers in the school and in a couple of the other area schools are doing, you know, extra credit programs with their students, high school students, to learn some of the, you know, to come in and hear some of these readings and see this art.
Mm-hmm. Well,
go ahead, Howard.
That's another thing that I should bring up. When we were doing our writing as the writing, Deadly Writers Patrol, Craig Warner is a professor at the UW, and he teaches a class on Vietnam. And he would have us come in and talk and read our writings to his students and kind of open their eyes, too.
Well, Howard, thank you. We're all out of time. Scott, I'm sorry. Howard, thank you so much for joining us today. And actually, Scott, I wanted to give you a chance to give a plug if people still want to contribute.
If people still want to contribute, look at the Heartbeat Center for Writing, Literacy, and the Arts on the website, on Facebook. And one other thing quickly about that venue, it's surrounded by things. Howard was involved, and I was involved in the siting of the High Ground Veteran Memorial Project in Neillsville, which is just a few miles away. And, you know, there are other, it's Veterans Day week, so, you know, we're inviting people to stop past those places and come and see us.
Wonderful. We've been talking to Scott Schultz and Howard Sherpy about the Veterans Express Themselves event November 7th in Whitehall, Wisconsin. Stick around, more to come here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. For this edition of Food Friday, we're talking to a home cook who says she doesn't just cook to eat, she cooks to feel pleasure and optimism. She's with us now to share some of her principles and recipes for finding joy in the kitchen. You can join in, too. What recipes bring you the most joy? Is cooking a relaxing experience for you, a chore, maybe a little of both? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Alana Chernilla joins us now. She's the author of The Homemade Kitchen, Recipes for Cooking with Pleasure. She blogs at eatingfromthegroundup.com. Alana, thanks a lot for joining us today.
No, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I mentioned that idea that cooking is fun, pleasurable, but it's a job, a task, a grind sometimes, and you write your book, you feel kind of both sides of that.
Oh, I do. And, you know, it's who doesn't? I think cooking is one of those things that we all have to do. We have to feed ourselves and feed our families. And really, in this book, I tried to figure out what would happen if I try to always find my pleasure and my joy in the kitchen, because it's something we have to do. And, you know, we can call it work or we can call it play, but we still have to cook.
So how do we keep that in mind? How do we keep ourselves on task to cook with pleasure?
Well, I think a lot of it comes from, you know, being really honest with who we are in the kitchen and what we love. So, you know, there's so many images out there of perfection and so many messages about what we should be eating and how we should be eating. And I think, you know, taking that all in stride and really just staying connected with who we are, what we love, what are the dishes that we love to eat, that we love to make, you know, what are the processes, the smells, the moments that make us happy in the kitchen? And, you know, are we a slow cook or messy cook, or, you know, do we like to cook quickly, or do we like to always cook for people? I think really staying true to those answers, it's such a help in loving our time in the kitchen.
Yeah, I watch sometimes the cooking competition shows, and they're doing these fabulous things that I'd never in a million years try, and then getting dinged because the, I don't know, radicchio was too crunchy or something like that, that I don't even understand. You say, though, your first principle in the book is don't worry about those guys. It's start where you are. So what does that mean?
So that really just means taking stock of where you are in the kitchen. You know, like me, I work in food and I write recipes and I write cookbooks and I love to cook. But I also, sometimes cooking feels like such a chore for me. You know, I have two young kids and everybody wants different things. And I cook for work and I cook for my family. So I have to sort of say, okay, here I am, this is what I do, and, you know, how am I going to carry this through in a way that's going to make my days even better? So, you know, for me, that's just really assessing where I am and what I love. And I really encourage other people to do that too, to say, you know, it's not what other people tell you that you should do. It's how do you want to do this? How do you want to live this life and feed yourself?
And you start out with some humble kind of basics of cooking in the book, a few different ways to cook eggs and some basic ways to cook a bunch of different vegetables. Nothing fancy, just straight up eggs, vegetables. And you say once you've got that, you can make some meals that you can impress yourself with.
Yeah, you know, so many of these basic techniques, they just become these incredible building blocks in the kitchen. And I think, you know, once we get these techniques under our belt, how to perfectly steam a vegetable, how to cook your grains in a way that they're delicious, how to poach an egg, you know, how to make pasta from scratch, even, you know, some more complicated things like that. These are all really simple skills that anyone can embrace in the kitchen. And once you have them, you can really build any meal that you want.
Well, can you talk us through one of my favorite things that I just stumbled onto in the last few years, oven roasting vegetables. This has made vegetables I like better. It's promoted some vegetables from so-so to really good. So talk us through the basics of oven roasting a lot of different vegetables.
That is my favorite way to cook almost every vegetable. And especially as we're coming into the fall and winter, most people, they roast potatoes or they roast carrots, but they've never roasted broccoli or they've never roasted bok choy. I mean, there's all sorts of vegetables out there that you can just brush with a little bit of olive oil, and you want to put them usually in a pretty hot oven at 400 or 425 and roast those vegetables until they get a little caramelized on the edges, until, you know, the sugars come out, and it just brings out a whole new flavor in the vegetable. And I found people just turn from vegetables they thought they hated. When you just roast them in the oven, a little olive oil, a little salt and pepper, or roast your cauliflower up with, you know, maybe some cumin seed and a little salt and pepper. It's amazing. You can eat an entire tray of cauliflower without even knowing it. It's such a treat.
Talking to Alana Chernilla. Her new book is The Homemade Kitchen on this week's edition of Food Friday. Before we get to some more advanced recipes, I want to talk about recipes for getting the next generation interested in cooking. You write about that. You're trying to get your kids to love making food, too. What have you been doing? What works to get the kids into this?
Well, you know, it's been a process in my family. You know, my kids have always wanted to cook, but I think a lot of families run into this issue where their kids want to help out in the kitchen, but of course they come walk in at 6 o'clock when you're just trying to get dinner on the table and everybody's hungry, and kids tend to be slow and they tend to be messy. And, you know, parents write to me all the time and they say, oh, I want to cook with my kids, but I feel like I'm a bad parent. I just get so impatient, you know? So, you know, judging based on that moment, I have started really advocating for letting kids cook on their own. And I think this is really how they learn their way through the kitchen. And of course, you want to be safe and, you know, be there to help with the knife, help with the oven, you know, depending on the age of your child. But I find that when I let my children, you know, they open up a cookbook, they choose their menu, they decide what they want to eat. And as long as they have a really nice expansive time in the kitchen to figure out their way through the timing of a meal and how they want it to work together, they really are so capable of creating that meal. And the pride they feel as they're feeding their family, I mean, there's nothing like it. It is so amazing to let kids just feed people, and they learn how to cook, and they learn that joy of feeding the people they love, which is something that will carry that with them forever. And so that's really my main, you know, my main advice when I'm talking to parents about helping their kids come into the kitchen is let them own the process.
My kids haven't gotten too much into cooking, except they'll make their own eggs. And actually, it's just started happening where I'll offer to make eggs and they reject it. Like, no, Dad, you don't do it right. So have you hit any recipes yet where mom's is viewed as inferior to the kids' version of it?
Well, you know, my older daughter, who's 12 now, she makes a really good baked macaroni and cheese.
Uh-huh.
And she usually uses, I have a recipe in my first book, The Homemade Pantry for Baked Macaroni and Cheese. And she started off with that recipe, but she has a few twists and turns that she's included on her own. And she makes such a good macaroni and cheese. And often I'll say, oh, do you guys want baked mac and cheese tonight? And she'll say, yeah, but how about if I make it? So I think she surpassed me in that one. She's really good at the cream sauce.
Well, let's get into a recipe you shared with us. We've got this one up, by the way, on the Central Time Facebook page, a butternut squash pasta with bacon and sage brown butter. So this is a great fall recipe, it sounds like. Talk us through it a little bit.
Yeah, this is a really nice recipe because it's really simple in its preparation, but it's got a few little elements that just fancy it up. And I love pasta for quick weeknight meals, and you know, you can really get this out on the table pretty quickly. And so what I do is I cube up a butternut squash, and then I roast that in the oven. And at the same time, I'm actually roasting some sliced up onions, and I'm roasting the bacon. So I'm cooking the bacon in the oven. Mm-hmm. So all of these elements are all happening in the oven together. And while that is roasting, I'm boiling water for pasta. And then I'm also just browning a little bit of butter, which is, people think that's a fancy thing to do, but it's really, really simple. And it turns melted butter into something nutty, wonderful, and the flavor totally transforms. So I brown a little butter, and then at the end, I toss together the pasta, the bacon, the butternut squash, the onions, and at the last moment in that brown butter, I throw a few fresh sage leaves in, and they just crisp up, and they turn into crispy, amazing little treats. And the whole thing gets mixed together with a little bit of pasta water, which is really the secret magic ingredient, and some Parmesan. And it's, you know, it's buttery, and it's wonderful, but it tastes, that sage and the butternut squash, it's like the taste of fall. If you could really put it all into one bowl, that's it. Well, it's a great recipe.
And butter, bacon, and sage, your house must smell awesome for like days.
Oh yeah, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong.
We're talking to author Alana Chernilla about her new cookbook. It's called The Homemade Kitchen, Recipes for Cooking with Pleasure. And we want you to share your recipes for cooking with pleasure. What makes you love cooking? What's your favorite thing to make? And how are you trying to pass a love of cooking to your children or maybe your grandkids? Share your recipes, your cooking principles at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page where you'll find that recipe we were just talking about, butternut squash and pasta and bacon and sage. We'll get to your calls, continue the conversation after a look at some of the latest news with Kristen Durst. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday conversation now about cooking with pleasure with cookbook author Alana Chernilla. Her new book is called The Homemade Kitchen. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy cooking? Do you love cooking? Is it one of the things in your life that gives you pleasure? Is it a joy for you to make food for yourself and for your family, for friends, for other people? What do you love about cooking? What recipe is the most fun for you to make? And how are you passing on your love of cooking maybe to your kids or grandkids? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Alana, one thing I love, a recommendation in your book, is keep a lot of your scraps, and you'll be able to use them for other stuff down the road. So what kind of cooking scraps should we be saving and repurposing later?
Well, there are so many treasures in our kitchens that we're used to throwing away. And, you know, start with squash seeds. That's one that people, you know, are just starting to catch on to. So especially with, you know, Halloween coming up, those, you know, not the jack-o'-lantern seeds, mm-hmm. but, you know, if you can get them out, you know, before you carve, those are great. Or any pumpkins that are in the store right now, you can just scoop out those seeds and roast them up, and they're a great snack. And I also love to save peach pits, and they make wonderful tea. It's like sweet and almondy and wonderful. You can save your chicken bones and beef bones and use them for stock. And I like to save those in bags in the freezer along with tops of leeks and skins of vegetables, and they make fantastic stock. So there are so many treasures in the kitchen that we can start saving, and it saves you money, and it also just brings more flavor and wonderful things into your kitchen that you might not know are even there.
And you mentioned the pasta water, too. That's something I've done, you know, just freeze that up and then add it adds like some depth or texture or something to soup stock.
It's true. So when you cook pasta in pasta water, the water absorbs all that starch from the pasta. And often you're salting the water, too. So you get this really, you know, thick liquid that adds body and, like you said, so much flavor to sauces. It's really a secret ingredient that can improve any sauce or pasta dish or soup. It's a wonderful ingredient to save.
One hazard is that you could get made fun of by, I don't know, your spouse for having all these weird scraps and frozen water. Take your proof of the freezer. Have you encountered this? I have.
Well, I have my own little portion of the freezer, and my husband knows that, you know, if he sees bones and vegetables.
Why are we freezing compost?
Exactly. He's gotten used to it.
Well, another tip you have is a lot of the stuff you might buy packaged at a store, you can make your own. Like you say, hey, if you've got milk and some cream, you can make a lot of your own dairy products. What kind of things do you do?
Well, that's really how I got started in food. I got started making my own yogurt, and I just loved the process so much. And now, you know, I actually teach home cheese making, and I make my own ricotta cheese and mozzarella. And in the book, I have a recipe for feta. That's one of my favorite cheeses to make at home. I make goat cheese and, you know, just all the really simple, fresh cheeses. They don't take much aging or any special equipment. They're really easy to make. And especially once you start and you learn the technique once or twice, it just can become one of those recipes that you make in the kitchen. Those are great recipes to have in your repertoire.
A lot of, I know I'm here in Wisconsin, but making my own cheese seems like one of those things that it's just too complicated. I'm not going to do it. You say it's easy. How easy, really?
Well, there is nothing as easy as ricotta cheese. So you start with a good half gallon of milk, and I know you have a lot of good milk there in Wisconsin. So you start with good milk, and you add some lemon, and you just bring that mixture up to a high heat slowly, just stirring every so often, and you'll see the curds will separate from the whey. And you can just let that cook while you're, you know, if you're making lasagna, you can be making your noodles and making your sauce and let that ricotta make itself while everything else is happening. And after about 40 minutes, you're going to end up, you give it a stir, and really the ricotta just comes right out of the whey. You strain it through a strainer and you end up with the silkiest, most delicious cheese. It's just wonderful. And because I make it with lemon, it has a really faint lemon flavor, which is so nice. And yeah, I mean, it's barely a recipe. It makes itself so easily.
We are talking about cooking with pleasure. Alana Chernila is our guest on this edition of Food Friday. She is the author of The Homemade Kitchen, Recipes for Cooking with Pleasure. She also blogs, by the way, at eatingfromthegroundup.com. Another recipe from your book. We'll stick with our squash theme to go along with the one we have on the Central Time Facebook page. Stuffed winter squash, a total fall recipe there. Tell us about that one.
Well, that's a really great way to use up a lot of scraps in the refrigerator. So this is a great recipe if you have some leftover grains, like maybe you made rice for dinner the other night, or it's great with some other grains like millet or farro or whatever you're into in the kitchen. So if I have some already cooked grains, what I'll do is I'll start with a couple of winter squash, and I like to use the smaller varieties like acorn or dumpling, or sometimes if you have access to Carnival squash, which are really beautiful. They're all striped. And I just cut those in half, scrape out the seeds, save those seeds for roasting. And I roast the squash first. And while the squash is roasting, I'll just cook up a mixture of that cooked grain and a little bit of chopped apple, some leek. And I like to use chorizo, so I have a nice spice in there, but you can use bacon or any other kind of sausage. Or you can just use pecans if you're wanting to make a vegetarian version. And so I'll make up that mixture. Once that squash is roasted, I fill the hollows of the squash with that mixture, and it really makes its own little bowl. It's so good. So I fill it to overflowing, top it with a little bit of grated cheese, put it under the broiler for just a moment, and then you end up with these beautiful little edible bowls of really great filling. And the apples, the leeks, the squash, it's so good. And you know, serve it with a little salad, and it's just a lovely, lovely dinner for this time of year. It's wonderful.
Let's bring in a caller. We've got Tim on the line in Appleton. Tim, hi.
Hello to you.
What do you got for us, Tim?
Well, it's what I call comfort food fish chowder. I start out with some onions and garlic in a saucepan. I then dump in one box of Kitchen Basic chicken stock. I put in some fresh tomatoes. I put in some parsley, dried parsley, dried celery leaf, and dried basil. And then I add some maybe a cup of heavy cream. Then I do that, and while this is heating, and then it's on its way. So now I dump the one stick of cut up haddock.
Haddock.
Yeah.
Tim, that sounds fantastic. And he says it's his comfort food. Is that the most fun thing to cook? Because you know it's going to be great to eat whatever your favorite comfort food is, Alana?
Yeah. You know, I think we all have those dishes that just put us at ease. And especially like when we need it the most. I mean, I think it's so great to have those things you know are just going to make you feel better. And that sounds like a really great one.
Well, we started, Alana, with your principle, start where you are. Another one I wanted to get to that you say is important to keep in mind, do your best and then let go. So why is that important to keep in mind in the kitchen?
That's my favorite. Well, for so many reasons. And I think, you know, that principle really came about from some, you know, a lot of conversations I've had with readers on my blog and over the years about all the different input about what we should be eating, how we should be feeding our families, you know, what's dangerous, what's going to make us fat, what's going to make us sick, you know, all these questions. And, you know, my answer is always that these are really good conversations. We need to think about what we're eating and eat consciously. But in the end, really recognize that joy is a nutrient in itself. And just all that stress around food can be as bad for your health as any ingredient that we're worried about. And so just remember that if you're finding a way to make dinner, if you're, you know, however you're making it work in your own kitchen, do your best and then let go. Know that you've done your best. And I think, you know, that this premise also comes in handy when you're dealing with picky kids in the kitchen or, you know, any sort of situation where it just feels like, oh, how do I make this better? And just, I think it's time for us to go easy on ourselves in the kitchen. We need to just say, you know, I'm working hard, I'm doing my best, and I'm just going to sit down and eat dinner, and let's just call it a night.
That's a great place to leave it. Thanks to Alana Chernila, author of The Homemade Kitchen, Recipes for Cooking with Pleasure. Check out a recipe on the Central Time Facebook page. British singer Adele took over much of the world's internet bandwidth today with the surprise release of a new single and a video to go along with it. Fans and at least one Central Time producer have responded very positively so far. It's been 5 years since the release of her first album. It's a big hit. But apart from a James Bond theme song for Skyfall, nothing since then. The new song, it's called Hello, will be part of a just-announced album due out next month, the album titled 25. We're going to go to the news today with a sample of that new release. Here's Adele with Hello here on Central Time.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger and free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference between us and a million miles.